We'll make you a deal, Cena,
Han said, turning back to her.
We'll talk to Mon Mothma about the Senator. You talk to us about the Katana Fleet.
Cena's face went rigid.
The Katana Fleet?
Where your 6 dreadnoughts came from, Lando said. Don't bother denying it. I got a good look at that repeater display you've got up over the bar in the headquarters lounge.
Cena took a deep breath.
No, I can't tell you anything about that.
Why not? Lando asked. We're all about to be allies again, remember?
An unpleasant tingle ran up Han's back.
Unless you've already promised the fleet to Phalia.
We've promised Phalia nothing,
Cena said flatly. Not that he hasn't asked for it. Han grimaced.
So he is trying for a coup.
Not at all.
Cena shook her head.
Phalia wouldn't know what to do with a military coup if you gift-wrapped it and handed it to him on a drinks tray. You have to understand that Bothans think in terms of political and persuasive influence, not military power. The typical Bothan's goal is to go through life getting more and more people to listen to what he has to say. Phalia thinks that being the one to bring the Senator back into the New Republic will be a large step in that direction.
Especially if Akbar isn't around to oppose him?
Han asked. Cena nodded.
Yes, that's unfortunately another typical Bothan move. A Bothan leader who stumbles is invariably jumped on by all those who want to take over his position. In the distant past, the attacks were literal, knives and usually death. Now it's been modified to more of a verbal assassination. Progress, I suppose.
Akbar's not a Bothan, Lando pointed out.
The technique is easily adapted to other races.
Han grunted.
What a great group to have as allies. So do they just stab, or do they also help with the tripping?
You mean the bang transfer?
Cena shook her head.
No, I doubt that was Phalia's doing. As a rule, Bothans don't stick their necks out far enough to concoct plots on their own. They much prefer to take advantage of other people's.
More like scavengers than hunters,
Han said sourly. Probably explained why he'd always disliked Phalia and his crowd.
So what do we do about him?
Cena shrugged.
All you really need to do is get Akbar cleared. As soon as he's not vulnerable to attack anymore, Phalia should back off.
Great,
Han growled.
Problem is, with a Grand Admiral in charge of the Empire, we might not have that much time.
And if we don't, neither do you, Lando added. Wounded dignity aside, Cena, the Senator had better start facing reality. You're a small, isolated group with a line on the Katana fleet, and there's an Empire out there hungry for new warships. The minute the Grand Admiral tumbles to what you've got, he'll have the whole Imperial fleet on you before you can blink twice. Bring the Katana fleet over to the New Republic, and you get to be heroes. Wait too long, and you'll lose everything.
I know that,
Cena said, her voice almost too low to hear. Han waited, mentally crossing his fingers.
We don't actually know where the fleet is, she said. Our dreadnoughts came from a man who says he stumbled on them about 15 years ago. He's thin, below average height, with a sort of Weasley look about him. He has short white hair and a heavily lined face, though I suspect much of that appearance is due more to some past disease or injury than actual age.
What's his name?
Han asked.
I don't know. He's never told us that.
She hesitated again, then plunged ahead.
He loves to gamble, though. All our meetings with him have been aboard the Coral Vanda, usually across gaming tables. The staff there seem to know him quite well, though the way he was throwing money around, that may not mean anything. Croupiers always get to know the losers quickly.
The Coral Vanda?
Han asked.
It's a sub-ocean luxury casino on Pantolomin, Lando told him. Does 3 and 7 day runs through the big network of reefs lying off the northern continent. I've always wanted to go there, but never had the chance.
Well, you got it now,
Han said. He looked at Cena.
I suppose the next question is how we're going to get out of here.
That won't be a problem,
she said, her voice sounding strained, already having second thoughts, probably.
I can get the Harrier to take you back to Nukov. When do you want to leave?
Right now,
Hans said. He saw Cena's expression.
Look, no matter when we go, you're going to have some explaining to do to the Senator. We're in a race with the Empire here. Even a few hours might make a difference.
I suppose you're right,
she said with a reluctant nod.
Irenes, take us to their ship. I'll make the arrangements from there.
It turned out there was no need to make arrangements for the Lady Luck. Standing outside the ship's ramp as they arrived, clearly waiting for them, was Senator Bell Iblis.
Hello, Solo, Calrissian.
He smiled as Han and Lando stepped out of the speeder.
You weren't at your quarters, and I thought you might be here. I see I guessed right.
His eyes flickered over Han's shoulder as Cena emerged from the speeder, looked again into Han's face, and abruptly the easy smile vanished.
Cena? What's going on?
They know about the Katana fleet, Commander,
she said quietly, coming up beside Han.
And I told them about our contact.
I see,
Bell Iblis said evenly.
And so you're leaving, to see if you can persuade him to turn the Dark Force over to the New Republic.
That's right, sir,
Han said, matching his tone.
We need the ships. Need them pretty badly. But not as much as we need good fighters and good commanders.
For a long moment, Bell Iblis gazed at him.
I won't go to Mon Mothma like a beggar pleading to be let in,
he said at last.
You left for good reasons,
Han persisted.
You can come back the same way.
Again, Bell Iblis's eyes flicked to Cena.
No,
he said.
Too many people know what happened between us. I would look like an old fool. Or like a beggar.
He looked past Han, his eyes sweeping slowly across the buildings of Peregrine's Nest.
I don't have anything to bring, Solo,
he said, his voice tinged with something that sounded like regret.
Once I dreamed of having a fleet that would rival the best in the New Republic. A fleet and a string of decisive and pivotal victories over the Empire. With that, perhaps I could have returned with dignity and respect.
He shook his head.
But what we have here barely qualifies as a strike force.
Maybe so. But 6 dreadnoughts aren't anything to sneer at,
Lando put in.
And neither is your combat record. Forget Mon Mothma for a minute. Every military person in the New Republic would be delighted to have you in.
Bell Iblis cocked an eyebrow.
Perhaps. I suppose it's worth thinking about.
Especially with a Grand Admiral in charge of the Empire,
Han pointed out.
If he catches you here alone, you'll have had it.
Bell Iblis smiled tightly.
That thought has occurred to me, Solo, several times a day.
He straightened up.
The Harrier is leaving in half an hour to take Brelia back to Nukov. I'll instruct them to take you and the Lady Luck along.
Han and Lando exchanged glances.
You think it'll be safe to go back to Nukov, sir?
Han asked.
There might still be Imperials hanging around.
There won't be.
Bell Iblis was positive.
I've studied the Imperials and their tactics a long time. Aside from not expecting us to show up again so soon, they really can't afford to hang around any one place for long. Besides, we have to go there. Brelia will need to pick up his ship.
Han nodded, wondering what kind of report Brelia would be giving to his boss when he got back to Coruscant.
All right. Well, I guess we better get the ship prepped.
Yes.
Bell Iblis hesitated, then held out his hand.
It was good to see you, Solo. I hope we'll meet again.
I'm sure we will, sir.
Han assured him, grasping the outstretched hand. The senator nodded to Lando.
Calrissian,
he said, releasing Han's hand. He turned and walked away across the landing field. Han watched him go, trying to figure out whether he admired the senator more than he pitied him, or vice versa. It was a useless exercise.
Our luggage is still back at our quarters,
he told Sina.
I'll have it sent over while you get the ship prepped.
She looked at Han, her eyes suddenly blazing with a smoldering fire.
But I want you to remember one thing,
she said with deadly earnestness.
You can go now, with our blessings. But if you betray the senator in any way, you will die. At my hand, personally, if necessary.
Han held her gaze, considering what to say. The reminder, perhaps, that he'd been attacked by bounty hunters and interstellar criminals, shot at by Imperial stormtroopers, and tortured at the direction of Darth Vader himself. To suggest that after all that, a threat coming from someone like Sina was too laughable to even take seriously?
I understand, he said gravely. I won't let you down.
From the dorsal hatchway connection behind them came the creak of a stressed seal, and through the Lady Luck's canopy, the patch of stars visible around the bulk of the dreadnought abruptly flashed into star lines.
Here we go again,
Lando said, his voice sounding resigned.
How do I keep letting you talk me into these things?
Because you're the respectable one,
Han told him, running an eye over the Lady Luck's instruments. There wasn't a lot there to see, with the engines and most of the systems running at standby.
And because you know as well as I do that we have to do it. Sooner or later, the Empire's going to find out that the Katana fleet's been found and start looking for it themselves. And if they get to it before we do, we're going to be in big trouble.
And here they were, stuck uselessly for another 2 days in hyperspace while the Harrier took them back to New Cov. Not because they wanted to go there, but because Bel Iblis wasn't willing to trust them with the location of a stupid Peregrine's nest base.
You're worried about Leia, aren't you?
Lando asked into the silence.
I shouldn't have let her go, Han muttered. Something's gone wrong. I just know it. That lying little alien's turned her over to the Empire, or the Grand Admiral's outthought us again. I don't know, but something.
Leia can take care of herself, Han, Lando said quietly. And even Grand Admirals sometimes make mistakes.
Han shook his head.
He made his mistake at Sluis Van, Lando. He won't make another one. Bet you the Falcon he won't.
Lando clapped him on the shoulder.
Come on, buddy. Brooding about it won't help. We got 2 days to kill. Let's go break out a Sabacc deck.
The Grand Admiral read the dispatch twice before turning his glowing eyes on Pelion.
You vouch for the reliability of this report, Captain.
As much as I can vouch for any report that doesn't originate with an Imperial agent,
Pelion told him.
On the other hand, this particular smuggler has fed us 52 reports over the last 10 years, 48 of which proved to be accurate. I'd say he's worth believing.
Thrawn looked back at the reader.
Endor,
he murmured half to himself.
Why Endor?
I don't know, sir,
Pelion said.
Perhaps they were looking for another place to hide.
Among the Ewoks,
Thrawn snorted derisively.
That would be desperation indeed. But no matter. If the Millennium Falcon is there, then so is Leia Organa Solo. Alert navigation and engineering. We leave immediately for Endor.
Yes, sir.
Pelion nodded, keying in the orders.
Shall I have Kabarak brought up from Nisteo?
Yes, Kabarak.
Thrawn said the name thoughtfully.
Note the interesting timing here, Captain. Kabarak comes back to Honegger after a month's absence,
just as Solo and Organa Solo head off on secret errands to Nukov and Endor. Coincidence? Pellion frowned.
I don't follow you, sir.
Thrawn smiled thinly.
What I think, Captain, is that we're seeing a new degree of subtlety among our enemies. They knew that the return of a survivor from the failed Kashyyyk operation would catch my attention. They therefore arranged his release to coincide with their own missions, in the hope I would be too preoccupied to notice them. Doubtless when we break Kabarak, we'll learn a great many things from him that will cost us countless man-hours to finally prove wrong.
Thrawn snorted again.
No. Leave him where he is. You may inform the dynasts that I have decided to permit them the full 7 days of public shame, after which they may perform the rites of discovery as they choose. No matter how useless his information, Kabarak may still serve the Empire by dying painfully, as an object lesson to his race.
Yes, sir.
Pellion hesitated.
May I point out, though, that such a drastic psychological fragmentation and reconditioning is well outside the Rebellion's usual operating procedure.
I agree, Thrawn said grimly.
Which implies all the more strongly that whatever Organa Solo is looking for on Endor, it's considerably more vital to the Rebellion's war effort than mere sanctuary. Pellion frowned, trying to think of what might be on Endor that anyone could possibly want.
Some of the material left over from the Death Star project,
he hazarded.
More valuable than that,
the Grand Admiral shook his head.
Information, perhaps, that the Emperor might have had with him when he died. Information they may think they can still retrieve.
And then Pellion got it.
The location of the Mount Tantis storehouse.
Thrawn nodded.
That's the only thing I can think of that would be worth this much effort on their part. At any rate, it's a risk we can't afford to take. Not now.
Agreed.
Pellion's board pinged. Navigation and engineering signaling ready.
Shall I break orbit?
At your convenience, Captain.
Pellion nodded to the helm.
Take us out. Course is set by navigation.
Through the viewports, the planet below began to fall away. And as it did, so there was the short trill of a priority message coming through. Pellion pulled it up, read the heading.
Admiral, report from the Adamant in the Abrogado system. They've captured one of Talon-Card's freighters. Transcript of the preliminary interrogation is coming through now.
He frowned as he glanced down to the end.
It's rather short, sir.
Thank you,
Thrawn said with quiet satisfaction as he pulled up the report to his own station. He was still reading it when the Chimera made the jump to light speed, reading it very, very carefully.
Chapter 17.
Mara had never been to Abrogado Rey spaceport before, but as she walked along its streets, she decided it deserved every bit of the rock-bottom reputation it had worked so hard to achieve. Not that it showed on the surface. On the contrary, the place was neat and almost painfully clean, though with the grating antiseptic quality that showed the cleanliness had been imposed from above by government decree instead of from below by the genuine wishes of the inhabitants. It seemed reasonably peaceful, too, as spaceports went, with lots of uniformed security men patrolling the streets around the landing pits. But beneath the surface glitter, the rot showed straight through. Showed in the slightly furtive manner of the locals, in the half-hearted swaggering of the uniformed security men, in the lingering stares of the plainclothes but just as obvious quiet security men. The whole spaceport, maybe the whole planet, was being held together with tie wire and blaster power packs. A petty totalitarian regime, and a populace desperate to escape it. Just the sort of place where anyone would betray anyone else for the price of a ticket off-planet. Which meant that, if any of the locals had tumbled to the fact that there was a smuggling ship sitting here under security's nose, Mara had about 10 steps to go before the whole place came down on top of her. Walking toward a faded door with the equally faded sign, Landing Pit 21, over it, she hoped sardonically that it wasn't a trap. She would really hate to die in a place like this. The door to the landing pit was unlocked. Taking a deep breath, acutely conscious of the 2 pairs of uniformed security men within sight of her, she went inside. It was the ether way, all right, looking just as shabby and decrepit as it had when Finn Torv had had to abandon it in landing pit 63 of this same spaceport. Mara gave it a quick once-over, checked out all the nooks and crannies in the pit where an armed ambush squad could be skulking, and finally focused on the dark-haired young man lounging in a chair by the freighter's lowered ramp. Even in that casual slouch, he couldn't shake the military air that hovered around him. "Hello there," he called to her, lowering the data pad he'd been reading. "Nice day for flying. You interested in hiring a ship?"
"No,"
she said, walking toward him as she tried to watch all directions at once.
"I'm more in a buying mood myself. What kind of ship is this flying hatbox anyway?"
"It's a Harkner's Baelix 903.
The other sniffed, with a second-rate attempt at wounded pride.
"Flying hatbox, indeed."
Not much of an actor, but he was clearly getting a kick out of all this cloak and blade stuff.
Setting her teeth firmly together, Mara sent a silent curse down on Torv's head for setting up such a ridiculous identification procedure in the first place.
"Looks like a 917 to me,"
she said dutifully.
"Or even a 922.
"No, it's a 903,
he insisted.
"Trust me, my uncle used to make landing gear pads for them. Come inside, and I'll show you how to tell the difference."
"Oh, that'll be great," Mara muttered under her breath as she followed him up the ramp.
"Glad you finally got here,"
the man commented over his shoulder as they reached the top of the ramp.
"I was starting to think you'd been caught."
"That could still happen if you don't shut up," Mara growled back. "Keep your voice down, will you?"
"It's okay,"
he assured her.
"I've got all your MSE droids clattering around on cleaning duty just inside the outer hull. That should block out any audio probes."
Theoretically, she supposed, he was right. As a practical matter, well, if the locals had the place under surveillance, they were in trouble anyway.
"You have any trouble getting the ship out of impoundment?" she asked him.
"Not really," he said. "The spaceport administrator said the whole thing was highly irregular, but he didn't give me any major grief about it."
He grinned.
"Though I suppose the size of the bribe I slipped him might have had something to do with that. My name's Wedge Antilles, by the way. I'm a friend of Captain Solo's."
"Nice to meet you,"
Mara said.
"Solo couldn't make it himself?"
Antilles shook his head.
"He had to leave Coruscant on some kind of special mission, so he asked me to get the ship sprung for you. I was scheduled for escort duty a couple systems over anyway, so it wasn't a problem."
Mara ran a quick eye over him. From his build and general manner...
"B-wing pilot?"
she hazarded.
"X-wing," he corrected her. "I've got to get back before my convoy finishes loading. Want me to give you an escort out of here?"
"Thanks, but no,"
she said, resisting the urge to say something sarcastic. The first rule of smuggling was to stay as inconspicuous as possible, and flying out of a third-rate spaceport with a shiny New Republic X-Wing starfighter in tow didn't exactly qualify as a low-profile stance.
"Tell Solo thanks."
"Right. Oh, one other thing,"
Antilles added as she started past him.
"Han also wanted me to ask you if your people might be interested in selling information on our friend with the eyes."
Mara sent him a sharp look.
"Our friend with the eyes?"
Antilles shrugged.
"That's what he said. He said you'd understand."
Mara felt her lip twist.
"I understand just fine. Tell him I'll pass on the message."
"Okay."
He hesitated.
"It sounded like it was pretty important."
"I said I'll pass on the message."
He shrugged again.
"Okay. Just doing my job. Have a good trip."
With a friendly nod, he headed back down the ramp. Still half expecting a trap, Mara got the hatchway sealed for flight and went up to the bridge. It took a quarter hour to run the ship through its pre-flight sequence, almost exactly the amount of time it took the spaceport controllers to confirm her for takeoff. Easing in the repulsor lifts, she lifted clear of the landing pit and made for space. She was nearly high enough to kick in the sublight drive when the back of her neck began to tingle.
"Uh-oh,"
she muttered aloud, giving the displays a quick scan. Nothing was visible. But this close to a planetary mass, that meant less than nothing. Anything could be lurking just over the horizon, from a single flight of TIE fighters all the way up to an Imperial Star Destroyer. But maybe they weren't quite ready yet. She threw full power to the drive, feeling herself pressed back into the seat cushion for a few seconds as the acceleration compensators fought to catch up. An indignant howl came from the controller on the comm speaker. Ignoring him, she keyed the computer, hoping that Torv had followed Card's standard procedure when he'd first put down an abrogado. He had. The calculation for the jump out of here had already been computed and loaded, just waiting to be initiated. She got the computer started making the minor adjustments that would correct for a couple of months of general galactic drift, and looked back out the forward viewport. There, emerging over the horizon directly ahead, was the massive bulk of a Victory-class Star Destroyer, bearing toward her. For a long heartbeat, Mara just sat there, her mind skimming through the possibilities, all the time knowing full well how futile the exercise was. The Star Destroyer's commander had planned his interception with exquisite skill. Given their respective vectors and the Aetherway's proximity to the planet, there was absolutely no way she would be able to elude the larger ship's weapons and tractor beams long enough to make her escape to light speed. Briefly, she toyed with the hope that the Imperials might not be after her at all, and they were actually gunning for that Antilles character still on the surface. But that hope, too, evaporated quickly. A single X-Wing pilot could hardly be important enough to tie up a Victory-class Star Destroyer for. And if he was, they would certainly not have been so incompetent as to spring the trap prematurely.
"Freighter Aetherway,"
a cold voice boomed over her comm speaker.
"This is the Star Destroyer Adamant. You are ordered to shut down your engines and prepare to be brought aboard."
So that was that. They had indeed been looking for her. In a very few minutes now, she would be their prisoner. Unless... Reaching over, she keyed her mic.
"Star Destroyer Adamant, this is the Aetherway," she said briskly. "I congratulate you on your vigilance. I was afraid I was going to have to search the next 5 systems to find an Imperial ship."
"You will shut down all deflector systems..."
The voice faltered halfway through the standard speech, as the fact belatedly penetrated that this was not the normal response of the normal Imperial prisoner.
"I'll want to speak to your captain the minute I'm aboard," Mara said into the conversational gap. "I'll need him to set up a meeting with Grand Admiral Thrawn and provide me transport to wherever he and the Chimera are at the moment. And get a tractor beam ready. I don't want to have to land this monster in your hangar bay myself."
The surprises were coming too fast for the poor man.
"Freighter Aetherway,"
he tried again.
"On second thought, put the captain on now,"
Mara cut him off. She had the initiative now, and was determined to keep it as long as possible.
"There's no one around who can tap into this communication."
There was a moment of silence. Mara continued on her intercept course, a trickle of doubt beginning to worm its way through her resolve.
"It's the only way,"
she told herself sternly.
"This is the captain,"
a new voice came on the speaker.
"Who are you?"
"Someone with important information for Grand Admiral Thrawn,"
Mara told him, shifting from brisk to just slightly haughty.
"For the moment, that's all you need to know."
But the captain wasn't as easily bullied as his junior officers.
"Really? According to our sources, you're a member of Talengard's smuggling gang."
"And you don't believe such a person could tell the Grand Admiral anything useful?"
she countered, letting her tone frost over a bit.
"Oh, I'm sure you can. I simply don't see any reason why I should bother him with what will be, after all, a routine interrogation."
Mara squeezed her left hand into a fist. At all costs, she had to avoid the kind of complete mind-sifting the captain was obviously hinting at.
"I wouldn't advise that,"
she told him, throwing every bit of the half-remembered dignity and power of the old Imperial court into her voice.
The Grand Admiral would be extremely displeased with you. Extremely displeased.
There was a short pause. Clearly, the captain was starting to recognize that he had more here than he'd bargained for. Just as clearly, he wasn't ready yet to back down.
I have my orders. I'll need more than vague hints before I can make you an exception to them.
Mara braced herself. This was it. After all these years of hiding from the Empire, as well as from everyone else, this was finally it.
Then send a message to the Grand Admiral, she said. Tell him the recognition code is Haspir Barini Corbolan Triaxis.
There was a moment of silence, and Mara realized she'd finally gotten through to the other.
And your name?
The captain asked, his voice suddenly respectful. Beneath her, the etherway jolted slightly as the Adamant's tractor beam locked on. She was committed now. The only way out was to see it all through.
Tell him, she said, that he knew me as the Emperor's Hand.
They brought her and the etherway aboard, settled her with uncertain deference into one of the senior officers' quarters, and then headed away from Abrogado like a Minock with its tail on fire. She was left alone in the cabin for the rest of the day, and into the night, seeing no one, speaking with no one. Meals were delivered by an SE-4 servant droid. At all other times, the door was kept locked. Whether the enforced privacy was on the captain's orders, or whether it came from above was impossible to tell, but at least it gave her time to do such limited planning as she could. There was similarly no way of knowing where they were going, but from the labored sound of the engines, she could guess they were pushing uncomfortably far past a Victory Star Destroyer's normal flank speed of 0.45, possibly even as high as 0.5, which would mean they were covering 127 light-years per hour. For a while, she kept her mind occupied by trying to guess which system they might be making for. But as the hours ticked by, and the number of possibilities grew too unwieldy to keep track of, she abandoned the game. 22 hours after leaving Abrogado, they arrived at the rendezvous. At the last place Mara would have expected. At the very last place in the galaxy she would have wanted to go. The place where her universe had died a sudden and violent death. Endor.
The Grand Admiral will see you now, the stormtrooper squad leader said, stepping back from the opening door and motioning her ahead. Mara threw a glance at the silent Nogri bodyguard standing on the other side of the doorway and stepped through.
Ah,
a well-remembered voice called quietly from the command center in the middle of the room. Grand Admiral Thrawn sat in the double display ring, his red eyes glowing at her above the glistening white uniform.
Come in.
Mara stayed where she was.
Why did you bring me to Endor?
She demanded. The glowing eyes narrowed.
I beg your pardon.
You heard me, she said. Endor, where the Emperor died. Why did you choose this place for the rendezvous?
The other seemed to consider that.
Come closer, Mara Jade.
The voice was rich with the overtones of command, and Mara found herself walking toward him before she realized what she was doing.
If it's supposed to be a joke, it's in poor taste, she bit out. If it's supposed to be a test, then get it over with.
It is neither,
Thrawn said as she came to the edge of the outer display ring and stopped.
The choice was forced upon us by other, unconnected business.
One blue-black eyebrow raised slightly.
Or perhaps not entirely unconnected. And that still remains to be seen. Tell me, can you really sense the Emperor's presence here?
Mara took a deep breath, feeling the air shuddering through her lungs with an ache as real as it was intangible. Could Thrawn see how much this place hurt her, she wondered? How thick with memories and sensations the whole Endor system still remained. Or would he even care about any of that if he did? He saw all right. She could tell that much from the way he was looking at her. What he thought of it, she didn't much care.
"I can feel the evidence of his death,"
she told him.
"It's not pleasant. Let's get this over with so I can get out of here."
His lip quirked, perhaps at her assumption that she would in fact be leaving the Chimera.
"Very well. Let's begin with some proof of who you were."
"I gave the Adamant's captain a high-level recognition code," she reminded him.
"Which is why you're here instead of in a detention cell,"
Thrawn said.
"The code isn't proof in itself."
"All right, then,"
Mara said.
"We met once, during the public dedication of the new assemblage wing of the Imperial Palace on Coruscant. At that ceremony, the Emperor introduced me to you as Lyanna, one of his favorite dancers. Later, during the more private ceremony that followed, he revealed to you my true identity."
"And what was that private ceremony?"
"Your secret promotion to the rank of Grand Admiral."
Thrawn pursed his lips, his eyes never leaving her face.
"You wore a white dress to both ceremonies," he said. "Aside from the sash, the dress had only one decoration. Do you recall what that decoration was?"
Mara had to think back.
"It was a small shoulder sculpt,"
she said slowly.
"Left shoulder. A Zikwing design, as I remember."
"It was indeed."
Thrawn reached to his control board, touched a switch, and abruptly the room was filled with hollows of shoulder sculpts on ornate pillars.
"The one you wore is somewhere in this room. Find it."
Mara swallowed, turning slowly as she looked around. She'd had literally hundreds of fancy dresses for her cover role as a member of the Emperor's entourage. To remember one particular shoulder sculpt out of all that... She shook her head, trying to clear away the unpleasant buzzing sensation that hovered deep in her mind. She'd had an excellent memory once, one which the Emperor's training had made even better. Focusing her thoughts, fighting upstream against the disquieting aura of this place, she concentrated.
"That's it,"
she said, pointing to a delicate filigree of gold and blue. Thrawn's expression didn't change, but he seemed to relax a little in his seat.
"Welcome back, Emperor's Hand."
He touched the switch a second time, and the art gallery vanished.
"You've been a long time in returning."
The glowing eyes bored into her face, the question unspoken but obvious.
"What was here for me before?"
she countered.
"Who but a Grand Admiral would have accepted me as legitimate?"
"Was that the only reason?"
Mara hesitated, recognizing the tripwire. Thrawn had been in command of the Empire for over a year now, and yet she hadn't approached him until now.
"There were other reasons," she said, "none of which I wish to discuss at this time."
His face hardened.
"As I presume you don't wish to discuss why you helped Skywalker escape from Talon Card."
"You have killed Luke Skywalker."
Mara jerked, unsure for that first frozen heartbeat whether the voice had been real or just in her mind. The strange buzzing intensified, and for a moment she could almost see the Emperor's wizened face glaring at her. The image grew clearer, the rest of the room beginning to swim before her eyes. She took a deep breath, forcing calmness. She would not fall apart. Not here, not in front of the Grand Admiral.
"It wasn't my idea to let Skywalker escape," she said.
"And you were unable to alter that decision?"
Thrawn asked, the eyebrow lifting again.
"You? The Emperor's Hand?"
"We were on Merkur," Mara reminded him stiffly. "Under the influence of a planet full of Issa Mari."
She glanced over his shoulder at the Issa Mari hanging from the nutrient frame behind his chair.
"I doubt you've forgotten their effect on the Force."
"Oh, I remember it quite well,"
Thrawn nodded.
"It's their dampening of the Force, in fact, that proves Skywalker had help in his escape. All I need to know from you is whether it was Card himself who gave the order, or others of his group acting independently."
"So that he would know where to focus his revenge." Mara looked into those glowing eyes,
beginning to remember now why the Emperor had made this man a Grand Admiral.
"It doesn't matter who's responsible," she said. "I'm here to offer a deal that'll clear the debt."
"I'm listening," Thrawn said, his face neutral.
"I want you to stop your harassment of Card and his organization. To cancel the cash bounty on all of us, and clear us with all Imperial forces and worlds that you control."
She hesitated, but this was no time to go all bashful.
"I also want a monetary credit of 3 million to be deposited under Card's name toward the purchase of Imperial goods and services."
"Indeed," Thrawn said, his lip twitching in an amused smile. "I'm afraid Skywalker isn't worth nearly that much to me. Or do you propose to deliver Coruscant as well?"
"I'm not offering Skywalker or Coruscant," Mara said. "I'm offering the Katana fleet."
The amused smile vanished.
"The Katana fleet,"
Thrawn repeated quietly, his eyes glittering.
"Yes, the Katana fleet," Mara said. "The Dark Force, if you prefer the more dramatic title. I presume you've heard of it."
"I have indeed. Where is it?"
The tone of command again. But this time Mara was ready for it. Not that it would have done him any good anyway.
"I don't know," she told him. "But Card does."
For a long moment, Thrawn gazed at her in silence.
"How?"
he asked at last.
"He was on a smuggling mission that went sour," she told him. "They escaped past some Imperial watchdogs, but didn't have time to do a proper jump calculation. They ran into the fleet, thought it was a trap, and jumped again, nearly destroying the ship in the process. Card was on nav duty. Later, he figured out what they'd hit."
"Interesting," he murmured. "When exactly was this?"
"That's all I'll give you until we have a deal," Mara told him.
She caught the expression on his face.
"And if you're thinking of running me through one of Intelligence's sifters, don't bother. I really don't know where the fleet is."
Thrawn studied her.
"And you would have blocks set up around it even if you did,"
he agreed.
"All right. Tell me where Card is, then."
"So Intelligence can sift him instead?"
Mara shook her head.
"No. Let me go back to him, and I'll get you the location. Then we'll trade. Assuming the deal is to your liking."
A dark shadow had settled across Thrawn's face.
"Do not presume to dictate to me, Mara Jade," he said quietly. "Not even in private."
A small shiver ran up Mara's back. Yes, she was remembering indeed why Thrawn had been made a Grand Admiral.
"I was the Emperor's hand," she reminded him, matching the steel in his tone as best she could.
Even to her own ears, it came out a poor second.
"I spoke for him, and even Grand Admirals were obliged to listen."
Thrawn smiled sardonically.
"Really? Your memory serves you poorly, Emperor's hand. When all is said and done, you were little more than a highly specialized courier."
Mara glared at him.
"Perhaps it is your memory that needs refreshing, Grand Admiral Thrawn," she retorted. "I traveled throughout the Empire in his name, making policy decisions that changed lives at the highest levels of government."
"You carried out his will,"
Thrawn cut her off sharply.
"No more. Whether you heard his commands more clearly than the rest of his hands is irrelevant. It was still his decisions that you implemented."
"What do you mean, the rest of his hands?" Mara sniffed. "I was the only—"
She broke off. The look on Thrawn's face, and abruptly, all her rising anger drained away.
"No,"
she breathed.
"No, you're wrong."
He shrugged.
"Believe what you wish. But don't attempt to blind others with exaggerated memories of your own importance."
Reaching to his control board, he tapped a key.
"Captain, what report from the boarding party?"
The reply wasn't audible, but Mara wasn't interested in what Thrawn's men were doing anyway. He was wrong. He had to be wrong.
Hadn't the Emperor himself given her the title of Emperor's Hand? Hadn't he himself brought her to Coruscant from her home and trained her, teaching her how to use her rare sensitivity to the Force to serve him? He wouldn't have lied to her. He wouldn't have.
No, there's no point to that, Thrawn said. He looked up at Mara. You don't happen to have any idea why Leia Organa Solo might have come to Endor, do you?
With an effort, Mara brought her thoughts back from the past.
Organa Solo is here?
The Millennium Falcon is, at any rate, he said grimly. Left in orbit, which unfortunately leaves us no way of knowing where she might be, if she's there at all.
He turned back to his board.
Very well, Captain. Have the ship brought aboard. Perhaps a closer examination will tell us something.
He got an acknowledgement and keyed off the circuit.
Very well, Emperor's Hand, he said, looking up at Mara again. We have an agreement. The Dark Force for the lifting of our death mark against Card. How long will it take you to return to Card's current base?
Mara hesitated, but that information wouldn't do the Grand Admiral much good.
On the Aetherway, about 3 days. 2.5 if I push it.
I suggest you do so, Thrawn said. Since you have exactly 8 days to obtain the location and bring it back here to me.
Mara stared at him.
8 days? But that...
8 days. Or I find him and get the location my way.
A dozen possible retorts rushed through Mara's mind. Another look at those glowing red eyes silenced all of them.
I'll do what I can, she managed.
Turning, she headed back across the room.
I'm sure you will, he said after her. And afterward, we'll sit down and have a long talk together about your years away from Imperial service and why you've been so long in returning.
Pellion stared rigidly at his commander, heart thudding audibly in his chest.
The Katana fleet, he repeated carefully. So our young Emperor's Hand told me, Thrawn said.
His gaze was fixed solidly on one of the displays in front of him.
She may be lying, of course.
Pellion nodded mechanically, the possibility sweeping out like a spread cloak before him.
The Dark Force,
he murmured the old nickname, listening to the words echo through his mind.
You know, I once had hopes of finding the fleet myself. Most everyone your age did, Thrawn returned dryly. Is the homing device properly installed aboard her ship? Yes, sir.
Pellion let his gaze drift around the room, his eyes focusing without real interest on the sculptures and flats that Thrawn had on display today. The Dark Force. Lost for nearly 55 years, now within their grasp. He frowned suddenly at the sculptures. Many of them looked familiar somehow.
They're the various pieces of art that grace the offices of Rendili Star Drive and the Fleet Planning Department at the time they were working on the basic design of the Katana.
Thrawn answered his unspoken question.
I see,
Pellion said. He took a deep breath and, reluctantly, brought himself back to reality.
You realize, sir, how improbable this claim of Jade's really is.
Certainly it's improbable.
Thrawn raised glowing eyes to Pellion.
But it's also true.
He tapped a switch, and part of the art gallery vanished.
Observe.
Pellion turned to look. It was the same scene Thrawn had showed him a few days earlier. The three renegade dreadnoughts providing cover fire off New Cov so that the Lady Luck and the unidentified freighter could escape. He inhaled sharply, a sudden suspicion flooding into him.
Those ships? Yes,
Thrawn said, his voice grimly satisfied.
The differences between regular and slavery dreadnoughts are subtle, but visible enough when you know to look for them.
Pellion frowned at the hollow, trying hard to fit all of it together.
Your permission, Admiral, but it doesn't make sense for Card to be supplying this renegade Corellian with ships.
I agree, Thrawn nodded. Obviously someone else from the ill-fated smuggling ship also realized what it was they'd stumbled across. We're going to find that someone.
Do we have any leads?
A few. According to Jade, they escaped from an Imperial force on the way out of a botched job. All such incidents should be on file somewhere. We'll correlate with what we know about Card's checkered past and see what turns up. Jade also said that the ship was badly damaged in the process of doing its second jump. If they had to go to a major spaceport for repairs, that should be on file as well.
I'll put intelligence on it immediately,
Pellion nodded.
Good.
Thrawn's eyes unfocused for a moment. And I also want you to get in contact with Niles Ferrier. Pellion had to search his memory.
That ship thief you sent out to look for the Corellian's home base?
That's the one, Thrawn said. Tell him to forget the Corellian and concentrate instead on Solo and Calrissian. He cocked an eyebrow. After all, if the Corellian is indeed planning to join the Rebellion, what better dowry could he bring than the Katana fleet? The comm pinged.
Yes?
Thrawn asked.
Sir, the target has made the jump to light speed, a voice reported. We've got a strong signal for the beacon. We're doing a probability extrapolation now.
Very good, Lieutenant, Thrawn said. Don't bother with any extrapolations just yet. She'll change course at least once more before settling down on her true heading.
Yes, sir.
Still, we don't want her getting too far ahead of us, Thrawn told Pellion as he keyed off the comm. You'd best return to the bridge, Captain, and get the Chimera moving after her.
Yes, sir.
Pellion hesitated.
I thought we were going to give her time to get the Katana's location for us.
Thrawn's expression hardened. She's not part of the Empire anymore, Captain, he said. She may want us to believe that she's coming back. She may even believe it herself. But she isn't. No matter. She's leading us to Card, and that's the important thing. Between him and our Corellian renegade, we have two leads to the Katana fleet. One way or the other, we'll find it. Pellion nodded, feeling the stirrings of excitement again despite his best efforts to remain unemotional about this. The Katana fleet? 200 dreadnoughts just sitting there waiting for the Empire to take possession.
I have the feeling, Admiral, he said, that our final offensive against the Rebellion may be ready to launch a bit ahead of schedule.
Thrawn smiled. I believe, Captain, that you may be right.
Chapter 18.
They had been sitting around the table in the Matrax house since early morning, studying maps and floor plans and diagrams, searching for a plan of action that would be more than simply a complicated way of surrendering. Finally, just before noon, Leia called a halt.
I can't look at this anymore,
she told Chewbacca, closing her eyes briefly and rubbing her thumbs against throbbing temples.
Let's go outside for a while.
Chewbacca growled an objection.
Yes, of course there are risks, she agreed wearily. But the whole village knows we're here, and no one's told the authorities yet. Come on, it'll be okay.
Stepping to the door, she opened it and went out. Chewbacca grumbled under his breath, but followed after her. The late morning sunshine was blazing brightly down, with only a scattering of high clouds to interfere. Leia glanced upward at the clear sky, shivering involuntarily at the sudden sensation of nakedness that flooded in on her. A clear sky, all the way up to space. But it was all right. A little before midnight, the Matrak had brought the news of the Star Destroyer's imminent departure. A departure which she and Chewbacca had been able to watch with the macrobinoculars from the Wookiee's kit. It had been their first break since Kabarak's arrest. Just as it had begun to look like she and Chewbacca would be pinned down here until it was too late, the Grand Admiral had abruptly left. It was an unexpected gift. A gift which Leia couldn't help but view with suspicion. From the way the Grand Admiral had been talking in the Duca, she'd expected him to stay here until Kabarak's humiliation period had ended, after which the shipboard interrogation would begin. Perhaps he'd changed his mind and had taken Kabarak back early, with a backhand gesture of contempt for no Greek tradition. But the Matrak had said that Kabarak was still on public display in the center of Nisteo. Unless she was lying about that, or was herself being lied to about it. But if the Grand Admiral suspected enough to lie to the Matrak, why hadn't a legion of Imperial troops already swooped down on them? But he was a Grand Admiral, with all the cunning and subtlety and tactical genius that the title implied. This whole thing could be a convoluted, carefully orchestrated trap. And if it was, chances were she would never even see it until it had been sprung around her.
"Stop it!"
she ordered herself firmly, letting herself get caught up in the mythos of infallibility that had been built up around the Grand Admirals would gain her nothing but mental paralysis. Even Grand Admirals could make mistakes, and there were any number of reasons why he might have had to leave Honegger. Perhaps some part of the campaign against the New Republic had gone sour, requiring his attention elsewhere. Or perhaps he'd simply gone off on some short errand, intending to be back in a day or two. Either way, it meant that the time to strike was now. If they could only find something to strike at. Beside her, Chewbacca growled a suggestion.
"We can't do that,"
Leia shook her head.
"It'd be no better than a full-blown attack on the spaceport. We have to keep damage to Nisteo and its people to an absolute minimum."
The Wookiee snarled impatiently.
"I don't know what else to do," she snapped back. "All I know is that death and massive destruction won't do anything but put us back where we were before we came here. It certainly won't convince the Nogri that they should leave the Empire and come over to our side."
She looked out past the cluster of huts at the distant hills and the brown colm grass rippling in the breeze.
Glinting in the sunlight, the squat box shapes of a dozen Deacon droids were hard at work, scooping up a quarter cubic meter of topsoil with each bite, running it through some exotic catalytic magic in their interiors, and dumping the cleansed product out the back. Slowly but steadily bringing the people of Honegger back from the edge of the destruction they'd faced, and a highly visible reminder, if anyone needed it, of the Empire's benevolence toward them.
"Lady Vader?"
a gravelly voice mewed from just behind her. Leia jumped.
"Good morning, Matrak,"
she said, turning and giving the Nogri a solemn nod.
"I trust you are well this morning?"
"I feel no sickness,"
the other said shortly.
"Good,"
Leia said, the words sounding rather lame. The Matrak hadn't been so impolite as to say anything out loud, but it was clear enough that she considered herself to be in a no-win situation here, with dishonor and perhaps even death waiting for her family as soon as the Grand Admiral discovered what Kabarak had done. It was probably only a matter of time, Leia knew, before she came to the conclusion that turning the intruders over to the Empire herself would be the least disastrous course still open to her.
"Your plans?"
the Matrak said.
"How do they go?"
Leia glanced at Chewbacca.
"We're making progress,"
she said. It was true enough. After a fashion, the elimination of every approach they'd come up with did technically qualify as progress.
"We still have a long way to go, though."
"Yes,"
the Matrak said. She looked out past the buildings.
"Your droid has spent much time with the other machines."
"There isn't as much here for him to do as I thought there would be,"
Leia said.
"You and many of your people speak Basic better than I'd anticipated."
"The Grand Admiral has taught us well."
"As did my father, the Lord Darth Vader, before him,"
Leia reminded her. The Matrak was silent a moment.
"Yes,"
she conceded reluctantly. Leia felt a chill run up her back. The first step in a betrayal would be to put emotional distance between the Nogri and their former lord.
"That area will be finished soon,"
the Matrak said, pointing to the laboring decon droids.
If they finish within the next 10 days, we will be able to plant there this season.
Will the extra land be enough to make you self-sufficient?
Leia asked.
It will help, but not enough.
Leia nodded, feeling a fresh surge of frustration. To her, the Empire's scheme was